The Anton Savage Show
with Kiries.ie
on News Talk.
Now we are coming into the local and European elections, and at some point not that far thereafter, we are going to be heading into the general election. It's an election cycle that seems to be somewhat different than we have seen before in a couple of ways. First of all, the nature of the candidates. We are seeing candidates coming in who are apparently entirely fresh to politics, who are the type of candidate who might not have chosen to run in previous elections. And we're seeing an interplay between social media and AI and a shift in terms of the power of social media that we probably haven't seen before. To look at the implications of that, I'm joined by Stephen O'Leary, who is managing director at Olitico, which is a company that looks at social media analysis, trends and patterns. And also by News Talk Breakfast's Shane Coleman. And of course, Shane Coleman, we have to cast our mind back and remember, laboured for many years as a political correspondent and analyst before he went for the cushy job of broadcasting. How are you, Shane?
I'm good. I'm enjoying the cushy job of broadcasting.
Well, I'm very grateful that you're willing to do it on the weekend when you do it 5 days a week. So it's much appreciated. Put the old hat back on and give us a look at this election, because I wanted your view on the type of candidates. We have seen people like Niall Boylan deciding to run. We have seen people who have previously been broadcasters. We have seen people who are apparently apolitical until now. Is it attracting a different cohort of candidates than we would otherwise have seen?
Maybe to a point. I mean, I wouldn't overstate the presence of new candidates. I mean, European and local elections particularly European elections, do tend to bring out sort of higher profile candidates, people who, you know, wouldn't have been better known in other areas than politics in the past. But look, there is something afoot. How strong that movement is, I'm not so sure. I mean, I think these elections are going to be absolutely fascinating. As of now, my instinct is, and I could be proven really wrong. I got the last general election wrong, so I'm in no way omniscient in these matters. But I do have concerns. About this kind of viewpoint that we are inevitably moving to the right, that we will see a surge in such candidates elected in the European and local elections. My guess is we will not. I don't think we will see many far-right candidates elected. I suppose the one thing I would say is it doesn't take a huge number of votes to get elected in the local elections. A few hundred votes can win you the last seat in many of the local areas. So it is possible we will see a couple. I don't personally detect any huge movement towards the kind of people we see on social media who are making speeches at various rallies and who are standing for an election. I don't see a huge movement towards them. Where we are seeing a movement, I think, is towards independents. Independents who, look, for my money, are kind of playing it a little bit fast and loose in relation to the immigration issue, because they know they don't have to make decisions on this, because they know they won't be held accountable for the things that they say. So they can say, oh, for example, we shouldn't be part of this migration pact, or we need to have closed borders and so on. Like things that need to be challenged but aren't being challenged. And I think they are attractive to voters. And you're seeing it today. You saw the Red Sea Business Post poll this morning. Independents up at 19%. I'm not saying all independents are anti-immigration, but I think that is a factor absolutely in that. I thought it was really interesting. And again, you have to be slightly careful when you start breaking into subgroups. But the increase of 5 percentage points in independent support in Dublin up to 17%. Again, my guess is that is about people concerned about immigration. And just one last point. I'm conscious I've been talking for a little bit, but one last point before I let you come back in, Anton. What you are seeing is some of the mainstream parties moving. And I think Sinn Féin certainly got a bloody nose during the recent referendums. I know those referendums were nothing to do with immigration, but on the doors, they were. And what Sinn Féin were getting on the doors was, you guys are just the same as the mainstream parties. And they have clearly taken a decision since that to differentiate themselves from the government parties in relation
to immigration.
But
Shane, is there not a bit of a paradox there? If you are saying that there is a generalised shift towards anti-immigration sentiment, if there is a hardening in the traditional parties, if those independents in part may be fostered and shored up by those anti-immigration views. Is the logical extension of that not there will be a gaping maw for the more vociferously and aggressively anti-immigration right-wing candidates?
Well, possibly. I just don't see it. I don't think we've ever, in the Irish electorate so far, now you can never be complacent about these things, but we have never gone for extremes in the Irish electorate. Like when the economy collapsed back in 2011, Fine Gael, the most mainstream Conservative Party you could imagine, ended up almost winning an overall majority. People didn't turn towards extreme options the way they did in other countries after the crash. And I could be proven wrong. I don't see it happening here. I do think it's interesting what Sinn Féin is doing in relation to all their messaging at the moment. Sinn Féin is opposed to open borders. Now, last December, Mary Lou McDonald did an interview in which she said, I don't understand this argument about open borders. There are no open borders. There's a rule-based system, but they have clearly decided. I think it's disingenuous because there aren't open borders, but they have obviously identified a need to shift to this. We've seen it from Fianna Fáil as well in the last number of days. They had this promise that they were going to send back refugees who've committed crime. Now, there is absolutely no evidence, despite what you will hear on social media, despite what you'll be told down in your local boozer, there's absolutely no evidence that refugees or asylum seekers are engaging in any more crime than the wider population. In fact, the reality is it's probably considerably less. But nonetheless, I think parties are, I think their big concern is not the far right, those parties. I think their big concern is independent TDs, who tend to be down at these protests in local towns and cities, very much saying we need to be moderate about this, but also saying we need to listen to the concerns of local residents. And I think that is the big worry for the mainstream parties.
Let me pick up on the phrase used in relation to despite what you may see on social media, because that's Stephen O'Leary's end of things in Olitico. What people are seeing on social media and the rise of that right-wing sentiment and the kind of sharing of videos and expressions of anger, how does anybody tell whether that is a reflection of a reality and of an actual grassroots movement? And how do you tell if it is astroturf and created by algorithms?
It's increasingly difficult, to be honest, for any member of the public to tell the difference between the two. But in a way, when it comes to misinformation or disinformation, which is probably the biggest threat that faces democratic elections, not just in Ireland, but across the world in 2024, the concern is less with whether the footage taken at the scene of a protest or a demonstration or a rally is legitimate or not, because more often than not, that footage tends to be accurate, albeit the claims around the numbers of people who attend these, the support for them, etc., is often open to debate. There's much greater concern around the idea of the deep fake type videos, where what you're seeing actually you think is real, but in fact isn't. So,
well, this is an interesting thing because there's a big piece in the Mail today where TV anchor, news anchor, is talking about being the victim of a deep fake pornography video. And she said that she forced herself to watch it, and what she watched was 3 minutes of herself, effectively. That it was indistinguishable to her as to whether or not it was her. All done from a still image.
Yeah, and what we're seeing in the UK now is this is going to be legislated for. So they've recognised the issue here, and this is legislation that I think we'll probably see come into pass, if not during the summer, then certainly before the end of the year. The problem with it when it comes to politics is the speed with which the content get spread and shared in the first place. And in truth, the differing attitudes that each network has towards that misinformation or disinformation. So really the tipping point for this came in October last year with a piece of audio that claimed to be Keir Starmer swearing at members of his team. And it wasn't true. But before it could be discounted and claimed that it wasn't true, it spread pretty rapidly. And what happens is that supports an agenda. It helps to make a point. And while some networks and Meta in particular have got systems in place to remove this information at speed, other networks aren't as responsive and also don't maybe share the same kind of values or attitudes towards what that information looks like. So I think the biggest concerns that those who are involved in referenda and elections and anything that involves voting really in 2024 and it comes to the information piece is, how can you educate the electorate about this? Because in truth, the legislation won't be able to catch up. You won't be able to, it'll be like whack-a-mole essentially, right? As soon as you stop one, another will pop up. So as an electorate, we need to be prepared that this information is going to be out there. And I think in truth, it places a much greater onus on traditional media in lots of ways, because someone's got to be the barometer of truth here. Someone you will have to be able to go to. And in fact, I think it's that verification piece is going to become increasingly
important. Well, let me bring Shane in on this, because I would have thought that that is the worst of the appalling vista, because we have now had the ground so sown in recent years that if there is something that, quote, mainstream media says, well, that's actually false, for many people that will be seen as confirmation of the truth of the falsehood rather than a disproof.
Yeah. You're absolutely right, Anton. And I'm listening to what Stephen is saying with incredible alarm, because that is not my world. I don't really understand that world. If I'm totally honest, I certainly don't understand how it works. But I do understand the power it has, and I also understand. And I know you were talking about this a little bit earlier on the program with Paul Williams and your panel. There is a percentage of the electorate that are absolutely buying into conspiracy theories, and they believe the media and the government and the establishment are all in on this, and that they are pulling the eyes or pulling the wool over the eyes of the electorate. So that is a concern. Now, how big a percentage of the electorate is that? My guess, my hope, my prayer is that it is a pretty small percentage of the electorate here relative to, say, in the US, where it seems to be a very sizable minority. The local and European elections will tell us a huge amount. I was very conscious coming on here this morning that I am a little bit talking in a vacuum. My instincts and my guess is that you will not see these candidates doing well in the local elections. But we could be having, I'm also very aware that we could be having a very, very different conversation when the votes are coming in. My instinct is we'll see a move to the right in immigration, but not an extreme move to the right. But who knows? I could be wrong.
Now, we've had a long time, Stephen, of rules in respect of particularly broadcast media treatment of politics, so that there has to be, and particularly the closer you get to elections, there has to be balance in respect of matters to do with the public discourse. There has to be the greatest level of fairness and objectivity that can be applied and so on and so forth. Effectively, as I understand it, none of those rules apply to social media, or are they applied by any of the social media companies themselves?
So some are not in the same way. The rules are different. So that you don't have the same form of kind of legislation that applies. Now, that is changing. And there are new bodies being established in Ireland to deal with this. And in a way, there is a far greater level of transparency now, particularly when it comes to, for example, political advertising on social networks. Now, any political party that takes out advertising, for example, on Meta, there is a record of it. There's a record of how much they spent, who they targeted, what the reach for that was. And there's some groups in Ireland who are doing excellent analysis into this. So actually, in the 6 weeks that lead into the European and local elections, you can look at, on a candidate basis, on a party basis, how much they're spending, what the messaging is, where in the country that's being targeted at, you know, really get a really transparent view on.
But you can get a sight of who's being targeted.
Absolutely. Yeah. So in a way, we've never had actually greater access to that level of information. And to be fair, again, you know, social networks take significant criticism, and rightly so in lots of cases. But Meta recognized the need for a greater level of transparency, particularly when it came to investment in political advertising.
Although I suspect that part of the problem that you may see, or that we may see, is that whenever one social media network tightens the controls on that, the market just shifts to the less controlling, less regulated network.
Well, it does and it doesn't. It does to an extent, but in truth, you know, again, whatever your opinions on, let's say, Facebook and its relevancy to a younger audience, there are millions of people in Ireland who use that network. And for a certain demographic, perhaps a slightly older demographic, Facebook is still a very important network. And political parties realize this. And so it's not enough for them to just say, well, I don't want a record of every ad I send out. I'm not going to use it. In truth, they think they just accept, well, every other political party in Ireland has to play by these rules, so we're going to too. But it means that for journalists and fact checkers and anyone who wants to keep an eye on exactly what's happening here, that's become much easier in 2024 versus even 2020 and earlier.
What about, lastly, the prospect of bad actors, whether they be state actors or anybody else? We saw, of course, that the famous example of Cambridge Analytica and what it did in the 2016 campaign and suggestions of Russian involvement both in that campaign and in the Brexit campaign. Has much changed or improved in respect of limiting that?
Well, that's where the political advertising piece has gotten much better, but it's where the concerns around AI and deepfakes come in. So Starmer, who we talked about last October, that wasn't a one and done. You know, we saw it in January around Rishi Sunak. We saw it in March around Sadiq Khan. There is these recurring elements. And you referenced earlier the example of a video where someone could almost not tell the difference. That's probably where there is the greatest potential, not necessarily in paid advertising, but in just the creation of what appear to be viral clips that support a narrative being shared. And the big challenge that the networks and regulators face is how quickly can that be labelled as misinformation or disinformation and ideally removed before it impacts maybe an electorate.
Shane, briefly on that, do you get any sense that there is much concern at government level to get ahead of all of this?
I'm not sure how good they are in this area. I think certain parties are very good in this area. I think Sinn Féin are experts. They're ahead of the rest of the posse. I mean, it'll be interesting to see under Simon Harris, he has been dubbed the TikTok Taoiseach, if Fine Gael get better. I'm told they are improving. I'm told they do have people in their employ now, the main parties.
But more, do we need somebody who is a minister or in charge of a department to say, let's get regulating and get regulating quick?
Yeah, now... I mean, look, Steve would know more about this than I would, but I'm guessing that is easier said than done. And I think, as you did, I think Stephen used the whack-a-mole term. I'm guessing you regulate one area and something else pops up. And for me, the worry as a journalist is the mainstream media, in some ways, not completely, but in some ways, has been sidelined. And if you're talking about far-right candidates, if they were standing and they were doing well, like, it's our job in the media to interrogate them, to question them, to put the hard questions. But they don't need to use mainstream media. They can use social media. They can bypass us to get their message, their edited message, their sugar-coated message out without facing any real scrutiny. That, to me, is also a huge worry.
Shane, thank you very much for giving up Sunday morning. We will see you back tomorrow morning, bright and early, on News Talk Breakfast. That is Shane Coleman. And thanks likewise to Stephen O'Leary, Managing Director at Olytica.
The Anton Savage Show
with Kiri's.ie
on News Talk.